Welcome to this special edition of Game Changers Live. Today we're here with Nick Colucci, the CEO of Publicis Healthcare Group. Nick, welcome to Game Changers Live.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, for those of us in the audience who are not 100% familiar with PHCG, give us a quick overview of the company and what you guys do.
Well, Dennis, first of all, I'd be surprised if your audience doesn't know who Publicis Healthcare Group is. But in all seriousness, look, we're a collection of agencies that focus in the health and wellness space. We have offices in virtually every major market around the world, and we have a group of individuals that stay dedicated to our clients and help them deliver healthcare products and services to their target audiences.
Okay. And you're the CEO of the firm?
Correct.
All right. So not many people get to have the title CEO in their life. How did you get to this place? How did you get to this role? Tell us about your journey in that regard.
Right. Well, I'm a healthcare guy. I've always been a healthcare guy. When I graduated from college, I started at Roche and worked as a sales rep in Buffalo, New York. And I worked there for a few years and then kind of made my way up the ranks, if you will, to marketing and sales director at Roche before I left. Probably about 10 or 12 years I was there, and then I left to a startup company in Houston, Texas, Isis Technologies, where I became the director of marketing and sales and really built their marketing and sales function. They made a corneal topographer that would map the cornea of the eye, and it was used then for toric lens contact fitting. However, RK, PRK, and now LASIK became popular, and they were using that technology to start to drive the lasers and knowing how, you know, and for doing LASIK today. So we were bought by a laser company, and I decided rather than going with that company to come back east. I miss the East Coast. Our families and my wife's family and my family are from the East Coast. Uh-huh. And so I took a flyer, and maybe this is the real message to your audience. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I took a flyer and went to work for a guy named Glenn DeSimone at Medicus.
Sure.
And maybe he thought, and I know I thought, that it was just going to be a temporary stop along the way. But I loved it. I loved the work. He tossed me on a couple of different accounts. And I don't know. I guess the office loved me, and I loved it. And I was inspired by the work I was doing, and I felt like I could feel a real result at the end of my day, and it was different than what I had experienced in the past. I love consulting with clients, and before I knew it, I was running the New York office of Medicus. And then it's almost like saying the rest is history. Medicus was then part of that BCOM3, the Leo Burnett merger, with because it was part of Darcy Mace's Benton and Bowles. It was merged with Leo Burnett, became BCOM3. Within a few years, I was running most of the North American businesses, and then Publicis bought BCOM3 right after they bought Saatchi. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard for me to remember how all this happened, but then I was asked to, Maurice asked that we pull together the healthcare group in a very unique way from all the rest of the holding companies, that we would take all of our healthcare businesses and brands and have them report up through one management structure. Mm-hmm. Keep the agency separate, but have them eventually, rather than report up through the general agency brand, so in other words, Saatchi Health, or at the time Klempner, would report up through a separate entity that was called Publicis Healthcare Communications Group, not up through Kevin Roberts at Saatchi.
Uh-huh. Now, Mike, I'm sorry.
No. And before you know it, I did that for a few years as number two, and then I became the number one in a few years, and this is now, in May, will be my ninth year as CEO.
Congratulations. So that raises the question. I'm sure somebody in our audience is just at that point in their career where they're aspiring to be a CEO, and maybe it's one step away. What would be the the quick and dirty best piece of advice you could give a newly minted CEO in terms of leadership?
Two different questions, though.
Okay.
My first piece of advice is, if people are lowered down, setting your target on being a CEO, I'm not so sure whether that's the right thing. Leadership is the right thing, and whether you end up as a CEO position or not, there's lots of factors. We could talk about that another time.
Mm-hmm.
What would I say to a newly minted CEO? I'd say, first of all, remember what got you there, because it's not easy to get to that position. And, you know, you've probably got a lot of wonderful characteristics to begin with. That old statement about it's lonely at the top is true. It's a lonely job, but it's lonely mainly because you have to make the ultimate decision. So be decisive, but it's not really that lonely. Seek and surround yourself with wonderful people who can complement your strengths and shore up your weaknesses. Listen to them. Make sure you're tapped in as much as you can with the organization. Be a great communicator down. Be a great communicator by listening back up, but be decisive.
So let's build on that, if we can, Nick. What you're really talking about in some ways is establishment of a culture and having certain kinds of people in the organization. What's your vision for culture and bringing the right kind of talent in this organization to help make you guys special?
Well, you know, Norm, it's hard for me many times to talk about culture, because I feel like it's just the stuff that happens. But I know we make things happen. I know why you're asking me the question. Look, the greatest thing that leaders can do, or that I can do, is role model the right kinds of behavior that I want everyone to have. It starts with me. And the culture I like to establish, or I like to think I'm a big part of, is one where we're real, we're authentic people, who we are. We are comfortable in our own skin. We know what we're good at and what we're not good at. And we work and shore up those things that we're not good at. We're perpetual learners. I like people that are incredibly inquisitive, always inquisitive. And then we're people that then celebrate our strengths and play to that strength and stay focused on it. I believe in diversity and inclusion. I love lots of different people of different kind. When I took over as CEO, 20% of the management team, or the top 50 people in the organization, were women. Now 51% are.
Yeah.
So we're really about celebrating people who inspire, who empower, and who drive results. And that our culture is a whole lot about that. Are you inspiring? Are you driving results? Are you developing yourself and growing?
So I often believe that cultures enable people to do their best work. You know, you can have somebody in one place who is great, goes to another place and isn't great, and vice versa. And you often say, why? It's the same person, right?
Yeah.
And cultures permit that. Think about that for one second. When you're bringing great talent into this agency, what do you think about to help those people be as great as they possibly can be?
Well, first of all, I don't even have to think a second about this. The first thing that comes to my mind when you say that is I've had this attitude that there's no such thing, really, or there's very few bad people. There's very few bad employees, really. It's my belief in life. What there really are is just bad fits. Either companies who don't do a very good job articulating what they're looking for and what they're all about, they settle one way or another for lots of different reasons, or employees who do the same, who aren't very good at articulating what they're all about, what their purpose is about, what they want to achieve, and where they want to work, and they settle. And then it settles badly, or it ends badly. I think the best advice is that organizations need to stick to what they, you know, need to be proud of what they stand for and what they're all about, strengths and weaknesses, acknowledge it, and articulate it to those people that they're recruiting, and say, if you want to be a part of this, this is it. If you don't, if it's not right for you, it doesn't jive with your purpose, than not. And then you save a lot of people a lot of heartache and a lot of tough time. But I think that's really my best advice for that. As it relates to people itself, look, I've for a long time said that I love people that have intellect, not necessarily the smartest person in the room, not necessarily the one that has the greatest therapeutic knowledge in oncology or whatever it might be, just smart. And I think you guys know what I'm talking about. Just those dancing eyes that are really bright and energetic and trying to learn and do something new. People that have initiative, will. You don't need to tell them what to do. They tell you what needs to be done. And as my old football coach would say, they get off the line of scrimmage and block downfield. And they don't need to be told.
So I love this area, right? Because I've always believed that there were people who knew how to get from A to E, but had to stop at B, C, and D in between before they got to E. And I always loved the people who would find a way of going from A to B to E, because they didn't have to follow some process, but they make connections, right? And they bring their own personal experience and their intelligence, and something triggers. That connection happens, and that's where the magic happens. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Look, the greatest way to scale your business, to scale in this business, is to bring people in who do things better and bigger and differently than you do. Maybe they need to share your values, but there's lots of ways to get to them. And you love those people that reinvent those ways, who bring those new ideas. That's what clients in general are hiring agencies for.
Isn't that true?
And we love bringing those people in. But I wanted to say there's one more thing I look for, and that's integrity. You either tell the truth or you don't. But it's even bigger than that. Integrity to me is say what you're going to do and then do what you say you're going to do. And if you have to change it, say it again and then do it differently. And be upfront about that. Those are things that I think are really hard to train. Outside of that, you can train a lot of things.
Yeah.
I love passion. You know, we love collaborative people. We love people with empathy. But I really think, you know, if you're that kind of person that has that intellect, that initiative and will, as we say, and that integrity, we can and passion, we can teach a lot of other things.
You know, as you know, we're an executive search firm. And the kinds of people that we are seeking for clients like you are those who are highly talented and very valued. Now, here's been our experience. One of the most difficult employees, one of the most difficult candidates to pull out of a company and recruit is one who is engaged and excited and feeling appreciated and someone who is really into the work. That's a person that's very difficult, even for a skilled recruiter, to extract. I know that you guys are very focused on engaging your employees. Tell us how you do that.
Well, first of all, I want to say that engagement is a direct correlation to performance. I can tell you that we actually not only use secondary data to prove that, the Harvard Business Review just did a whole bunch of stuff on this. I actually just did an analysis of this, and we do an engagement survey every year, and those offices that have over an 80% engagement of their employees were the agencies growing at double digits.
Wow.
With only one exception who had double digit growth, but less than 80%, but more than 70. So they were still pretty far up there. And the contrary is true. Those that don't have high engagement scores or we can tell qualitatively beyond the quantitative part, they're also not performing as well. So there's real reason why. So what does that mean to us? Why is engagement? Here's the key to us. Leadership. Leadership in those organizations. When people love their boss, starting at the top of those organizations all the way down, that's the first thing that they're engaged about. And my guess is that all of you would say that one of the easiest ways to get somebody out of an organization is, I hate my boss. So that's number one, or it's one of the top things. What are the other things? People need to feel like what they're doing is purposeful. They're connected to it. It matters. And they need to be told that they matter as a part of all of that. So that's the second thing. And I think that's particularly true of this younger generation of millennials who are very much a purposeful, driven generation. They want to feel like they're doing something bigger. And I think finding a way to connect them to the work in that way is really important. Thirdly, career development. They have to see that they're growing, they're contributing, but that they're also growing. We push that a little bit on them, too, and say, well, we've got a hand in this, but you've got to have a hand in it, too. You've got to want to seek growth yourself. And then we have to be there to kind of push them along and make sure that they know that their career is progressing. Not easy to do in our business. You guys know that. Because clients love you, they don't want you off their business, and sometimes growth and development requires that that happens. But we have to work hard at making sure clients understand that, and employees do at the same time about how we balance that. So that's the third thing. Last thing, they got to be communicated to. They have to feel like they know what's going on. This is the age of transparency, whether we like it or not. You cannot hide things from people anymore. Maybe we're too transparent for those of us that are balding and graying, which I'm sitting around the table with here. We have to live in this world. And in this world, something happens on the other side of the world, and in about 3 seconds, we hear about it on the other side of the world, good or bad. In a microcosm, in a company or in a... When things are happening, you've got to be transparent about what those things are and what the impact is, and then real and authentic about what it can mean. And I think when you do those things, you really create an engaging culture, and employees are engaged.
Now, to that point, we walk the halls here often enough to talk to some of the leaders who have told us that, you know, Nick is a good mentor. Okay? And our advice to senior management when we're recruiting them is this. Never work for somebody that can't make you better. But conversely, we always give the same admonition to a CEO who we're recruiting for. Don't hire a leader who can't make you a better CEO. Do you agree with that philosophy? Or is that something that, you know, the Troianus Group came up with, it's not relevant?
No, I totally agree with it. I have to tell you, though, we struggle with it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure everybody we hire, I'm not sure I'm a great mentor for everybody, and I'm not sure everybody we hire can be a great mentor for us. Lots of times we cloud our minds with all these other different things that we're trying to hire for, different skill sets. It's probably a great thing to think about, though, that anybody that you bring on board and hire and want a part of your team, you have to feel really good about what that person is all about and what they can add to you. You know, I have to, once again, it's old stories. Guys like me have these old stories. I remember going through this training program at Roche when I became a district sales manager, and it was really the first time I had to hire people and get responsible for managing people, and I was 27 years old at the time. So I was a sponge. And I remember going through this program called Targeted Selection, which I'm sure you guys know about, maybe even use to a certain degree yourselves. I still use principles. And after I was done with it, I left the meeting, and there was a district manager who had been around for years and years from South Carolina. And we got in a car and drove back to the hotel, and he said, well, all that stuff is really, you know, and that southern drawl is really good. I've learned a lot, but I still ask myself one simple question after I'm done interviewing. Would I be comfortable sitting in a car next to this boy for 8 hours a day for a week? That's one of the last questions I ask myself. I think it kind of gets to not only whether you like them, but are they somebody that you can connect with? And I think sometimes we forget those things, because if you're not willing to spend time with somebody or connect with them, you're not going to learn from them, and they're not going to learn from you. So sometimes there just has to be a little bit of that raw connection stuff.
Gee, Nick, I wish you would have told me and Norm this 12 years ago.
I don't think you guys need to learn how to interview people and pick the right people.